Man, thank you, Brother Bill. Hebrews chapter 11. If your Bibles be open, please, to Hebrews chapter number 11. It's good to be here all the time, anytime I can be here. It's good to be around Brother Bill and Brother Comfort and Brother Charette and the old and Brother Scoville, the old guy. He's supposed to sing till the storm passes by every time he sees me. But he's not up to it today, but I understand. When you get to be his age, you can't do what you used to. And anyway, we enjoy having Brother Scoville over the church anytime he brings the ensemble over, and our folk dearly love to hear him sing. And when he sang that the last time they were there, you could see people looking at each other and going, he can still hit that note. Because your voice goes down as you get older, right, Brother Scoville? It doesn't. Okay, never mind. Okay. Just trying to help you a little bit. But I do appreciate Brother Bill and the way he's carrying on the precedent set down by Brother Comfort in this college. I'm going to tell you a Ron Comfort story since he's not here. And I know Mrs. Comfort here because I saw her a while ago, but Brother Comfort, about 31 years ago, I was the administrator of Franklin Road Christian School in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and he was there to preach a revival meeting. And one day, he and Brother Brubaker came by my office and said, where is a good place to buy suits, a men's suits? And I said, well, Barry's Manufacturing up on Murfreesboro Road in Nashville is a good place to buy suits. And so, said, well, good, how do you get there? And I told them how to get there. So they left. Well, a few hours later, I was still there at the school. They came back by. And Brother Comfort had this suit and had a plastic bag over it and everything. He walked into my office. He said, well, what do you think? I said, man, that's going to look good on you. He said, not look good on me. It's going to look good on you. I said, what? He said, yeah, we bought you one while we were up there. Now, Christian school workers don't buy many new suits, okay? And so I was just thrilled that he, and I wore that as a charcoal pinstripe suit. And I wore that thing until I could wear it no longer. And since I don't have it anymore, I hope that Brother Bill carries on the tradition of Brother Comfort. My wife knows my size, Brother Bill, but seriously, he is carrying on the tradition that has been set down to precedents, and I appreciate it. And he's young. I remember when Brother Alton was just getting out of college. And he's got great zeal for the Lord, and I praise God for that. There was a great preacher by the name of Billy Sunday you've heard of. I know, the great evangelist who loved to preach on sin. And he says, I'm against sin. I'll kick it as long as I've got a foot. I'll fight it as long as I've got a fist. I'll butt it as long as I've got a head. I'll bite it as long as I've got a tooth. When I'm old and fistless and footless and toothless, I'll gum it till I go home to glory and it goes home to perdition. You've been on spring break. Did you have a good time? Tell the truth. Did you enjoy mama's cooking? Or daddy's, whoever cooks at your house. Hey, I hope you had a good time. But I told Brother Bill in the office, I felt like the Lord was leading me today to preach on this topic to begin the Bible conference this week. And as you come back from spring break, it's fun for a while. It's fun for a while. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse number 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures. Read the rest of that verse out loud with me, please. Of sin for a season. Say it again. Of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Now, that is a loaded statement right there. Verse 26, the treasures in Egypt we'll talk about. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. It's fun for a while. I'm concerned that our young people today and the younger generation today don't have any clue what sin's all about. Oh, they know what sin is, but they don't really know what it's all about. They don't know where it's going to lead them, because many of the preachers that are popular today don't preach on sin. Many of the preachers on TV, you don't get too many love offerings from television if you preach on sin. So they preach on self-esteem instead of sin. But, for example, the most popular preacher in America today is... You got him. Y'all must watch him all the time. Joel Osteen. Joel Osteen says, I don't want to be judgmental. Well, you can't be a Bible preacher and not preach on sin. You can't preach the whole counsel of God and not preach on sin. And the Bible judges. I don't judge. I just preach the Bible and what the Bible says. And the Bible does the judging. But preaching in America today, especially in the media, has lost its note of authority. It's lost its note of thus saith the Lord, and this is right, and this is wrong. And preaching today doesn't expose sin like it used to. I'm going to tell you today what the world won't tell you about what sin really does and where sin really leads you. When you pastor one church as long as I have, you've got a lot of stories. You got a lot of illustrations of what the Bible's teaching here today. Hebrews chapter 11 is this wonderful faith chapter of the Bible. Verse 4, by faith Abel. Verse 5, by faith Enoch. Verse 6, without faith it's impossible to please him. Verse 7, by faith Noah. Verse 8, by faith Abraham. And on. Verse 11, through faith Sarah. And verse 20, by faith Isaac. Verse 21, by faith Jacob. By faith Joseph. Verse 22, and now by faith Moses. It's all about faith. If you want to please God, have faith. If you want to get the Lord happy with you, have faith. I love it when my kids, who are all grown and gone now, but when they were little and they trusted Daddy and they trusted Mama, I'm here to tell you, the Lord loves it when we trust Him and when we put our faith in Him. You trust Him with your school bill. You work hard, but you trust Him with your school bill. You trust Him with every need that you've got. You trust Him. You have faith in Him. But this story here in Hebrews 11 is kind of a parenthesis in this whole story of faith. And it illustrates a little more fully the story of Moses than it does about Joseph and Jacob and Isaac and Sarah and all the rest. So we get a little more information about Moses' faith here in verse number 23 through 27. It says in verse 23 that his parents hid him for 3 months because he was a proper child. What does it mean? He was a proper child. I believe it means that he was a fair child. He was a beautiful child, if you want to say it that way. He was a lovely little baby, and he was such a proper child that his parents did not want to risk him being killed by Pharaoh. Pharaoh had ordered all the Hebrew babies to be drowned in the Nile River. And if you know much about Egyptian culture, they worshiped the Nile River. And therefore, they did not want their little baby to be drowned in the Nile River. Now, hear this closely. The killing of babies is a horrible thing. The killing of babies is a horrible, horrible thing. And Pharaoh was the first abortionist in the Bible. And Pharaoh wanted to kill all the Hebrew babies in the river. A few weeks ago, it was about 3 now, my phone rang about 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. And it was one of the ladies in our church that said, "Pastor, could you get to Asheville, to the Mission Hospital?" And that's an hour from where I live. And said, "My daughter Ashley is going to have this baby. And she's only 25 weeks along." 25 weeks. I said 25 months one time, and I said, "Oh, that's terrible. 25 weeks, not 25 months." But she's 25 weeks alone, and it's their first child, and Ashley and Andrew are a young couple in our church. And so I got my clothes on and whatever and told my wife I'd be back whenever, and took off to Asheville in the middle of the night. Got over there right as they were bringing this little baby out of the delivery room and going up to the NIC unit, they call it, the neonatal ICU. So I went with the daddy and with the doctors and the nurses, got on the elevator, just went up to the ICU with them. And finally, when I got up there and they laid this little baby on this table, I had a chance to see this little baby, 1 pound and 9 ounces. 1 pound, 9 ounces. But that little baby was breathing. That little baby's heart was beating. That little baby had 10 toes. That little baby had 10 fingers. That little baby had 2 ears. That little baby had 1 nose, 1 mouth, 2 eyes. That little baby was perfectly formed. It was only 25 weeks alone in the womb, but today it's legal to kill that baby. I was more determined than ever after seeing that baby that night in that ICU unit. Hey, abortion is the most horrible thing that we allow in our country today. And so here we have Pharaoh, and he's an abortionist, and he's killing all the Hebrew babies. But God intervened here. God got involved here. And so the Bible tells us back in the book of Exodus, we know the story, how that God laid it on the heart of Pharaoh's daughter to take care of this little baby. She heard the baby crying, and a crying baby can get to the best of us. And it gets to me all the time. So she took the baby and said, "Let's take care of this baby. Let's take this baby to the palace." And so Moses is raised in the palace. You know the story. And raised as the child of Pharaoh's daughter. And on the outside, it looks like everything is going well. And God worked it out so that Moses' real birth mother, Jochebed, is able to nurse him and raise him up. Isn't that an amazing thing? Here she gave her baby up, hid the baby in the bulrushes, and God works it out, so Pharaoh's daughter hires her to come. She didn't just nurse her own child, she got paid to do it. Oh, God doesn't miss any details. He covers all the bases all the time. And he turned the tables on Satan's plan. And now in verse 24, you got, he's not a baby anymore. Moses is a grown man in verse number 24. He's been educated. Just like you're getting educated. He's been well trained. He's been living high on the hog in Pharaoh's palace. Pharaoh's daughter has been working on making him a fine Egyptian-like young man. But God's been working on the inside all along. Moses was making now the big decision. He refuses, it says in verse 24, to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. So he's made a decision, a huge decision. And could I say this to you kids here today? Life is full of big decisions. Life is nothing but decisions. And your life is determined by your decisions. And Moses made a great decision here. I think of the decisions I've had to make. And I'll be 60 in May. Don't look like it, I know, but I'll be 60 in May. Look older. But anyway, but I've made a lot of decisions I've had to make. I had to make a decision about vocation. What did God want me to do? Had to make a decision about a life partner. By the way, the second biggest decision in all of life is that one right there. Life partner. I have too many people put the emphasis on which school you go to, and I'm all for going to the good schools. But that's not the second biggest decision in life. Second biggest decision in life is who you marry. After salvation is who you marry. So, life partner, education, church, and all kinds of things. But Moses made this decision totally by faith. Notice it says in verse 24, by faith, Moses, he, at that point, by faith, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He didn't have any great promises to hang on to there. But he just simply said, I'm gonna not be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. I'm gonna turn my back on all of this I've been given. And all the society I've been offered and everything, it would seem to be the height of ingratitude, but Moses made the decision by faith that he was not going to be identified with that crowd. Now, when I read that verse and I see where he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, I think of three things about that choice. And I'm not a three-point preacher, but here's three things. Number one, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. That tells me it matters what you're called. It matters what you're called. I don't want to be called a Protestant. I want to be called a Baptist. I don't want to be called just any Baptist. I want to be called an independent Baptist. Not just an independent Baptist, independent fundamental Bible-believing Baptist. Okay? It matters what you're called. Very important. So don't get into this crowd of, well, it doesn't, labels don't matter. Labels do matter. There's labels for a reason. That's like going to the grocery store, guys, and go, I don't care what's on the label. I do. If it's green beans, I want it to be green beans inside the can. If it's spinach, I don't want it. But if it's turnip greens, I do. But I care what's on the label. And my friends, we need to be careful. What we are called is very important. That's the first thing I see. And then the second thing I see in verse 25, he says he chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God. He chose to suffer with the people of God. It matters. Not only what you're called, but who you're identified with. And he did not want to be identified with Pharaoh's family. He wanted to be identified with the people of God. I love for people to know that I'm identified with God's people. I want people to know, hey, and I hadn't always been a pastor. I hadn't always been a preacher. But when I wasn't that, I still wanted everybody to know who I was identified with. That I was identified with the folks down at the local church where I was a member and where I was serving. That I was identified with the people of God. And then he made the third thing here. He says, I'm going to do that. I'm going to suffer affliction rather than enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. So he didn't want to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to suffer with the people of God, and he chose to deny the pleasures of sin. It's fun for a while. It is fun. What's it? Sin. Is sin fun, yes or no? Yes. Thank you, Brother Child. It is fun for a while. But his motivation was, he said, being identified with the people of God is greater than the pleasures of sin for a season. He says, it's greater. I'll be wealthier if I'm identified with the people of God than have the treasures of Egypt. Now, were the Pharaohs wealthy? That's like asking, does Bill Gates have a credit card? Okay, sure. Yes, they were wealthy. They were wealthy. The Pharaohs were amazingly wealthy. They were mummified after their death. The organs were taken out except for their heart. And they were buried in the pyramids, as you probably have studied, with all their earthly belongings, with the thought that they would live forever. And they would enjoy all of this. But he says, hey, Moses says, I'd rather suffer affliction with the people of God. Now, what were the people of God going through about that time? Where were they? They were in bondage. They were brick makers. They were suffering hard labor. And they were crying out to God all the time for help. Crying out to God all the time for deliverance. But he said, I'd rather be identified with the people of God. I'd rather suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. I graduated from high school in 1969. A little place called Liberty, South Carolina. Brother Childs knows right where it is. Little town. And my class had about 70 people in it. It was public school. I graduated there, and boy, there was a girl in my class. She was drop-dead gorgeous. I mean, beautiful. Every boy at Liberty High School wanted to date her. She was the homecoming queen, you know, all that stuff. She was beautiful. And she was my friend, but that was as far as it went. She was just friends. She just lived out the street from me. And we went to school for 12 years together. But I remember, I said, I wonder what it'd be like to date her one time. That's just a teenage boy thinking. Don't tell me you boys have never thought about that. I know better. If you're male, if you hadn't, I got doubts about you. But I used to wonder about what she's like. Well, I didn't see her for years. Long time went by, and a few years ago, I was in my hometown eating in a local cafe. Every small town's got a little cafe on Main Street, run by the locals for locals. And that means if you talk like you guys do, you don't go in there. If you go park your car, you don't go park your car in front of that cafe. The old rednecks will haul your car off somewhere. But it's a local cafe, local people, and I walk in there, and I see one of my old classmates. Hadn't seen him in years. And we sat down at the table and just started renewing acquaintances. And where are you doing? Where are you at? And all that. He said, have you heard about? And he named her. I said, no, where's she at? He said, she's down in Georgia. I said, what's she doing in Georgia? He said, she's in a nursing home. By the time we're about 57. I said, nursing home? What happened to her? He said, she's got cirrhosis of the liver. I said, is it what I think? He said, yes. Drinking. She'd been an alcoholic for years. Years. He said, Benny, if you could see her now, you wouldn't recognize her. He said, she's not the pretty girl we all knew in high school. She's lost all of her physical beauty. I said, how can I get a hold of her? He gave me a phone number at the nursing home. I called the nursing home. And after a few minutes, the nurse said, let me get the phone down to her room. There was no phone in her room. Took the phone down to her room, and I said, I called her name, and I said, it's Benny Bagwell. How you doing? She said, oh, it's good to hear from you, Benny. She says, I'm having a rough time. I said, well, I just want to call you and let you know I'm praying for you and I'm concerned about you. I said, I'm sorry I hadn't seen you in so many years. And about that time, they were coming in to do some kind of procedure on her. And so we had to end the conversation. I said, I'll try to get back with you. But I never had another chance. She died just a few weeks later. I'm here to tell you, people tell you that sins is great life. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's fun for a while. It's fun, and I'm sure she had fun for a while. I'm sure she was the life of a few parties. But look where she ended up. I was going to go down to her funeral or to whatever, but they had a graveside service only on a Sunday afternoon, and there was just no way humanly for me to get there and still be at church and pastor of the church, and I didn't get to go. But I'm here to tell you, it's fun, but it's fun for a while. Sin is exciting in the way it appears. It's exciting in the way it appears. I was out in the West a few years ago and was coming out of Los Angeles on the interstate highway. 15 is the highway. It's the highway that goes to Las Vegas. Say, preacher, what were you doing going to Las Vegas? Well, my wife has always wanted to go to Las Vegas. No, I'm just kidding. My wife, she's sitting by Ms. Scoville over here and she does not want to go to Las Vegas. If you knew my wife, you knew how funny that was. But anyway, she is the opposite. She's a Lester Roloff product, okay? Don't go to Las Vegas. So anyway, but we were flying in and out of Las Vegas because it was cheaper. And the airport's way out of town. So we were going out Interstate 15, and that's the most dangerous highway in the world. Because on Friday afternoon, all the people in L.A. are going to Vegas to spend all their money. And, man, you're going 85 miles an hour, and they're just going right by you. Just like that. We go way out through there in the desert, and after a while, you see all this glow against the night sky. That's Las Vegas. And man, it looks like I was 30 miles out, and I could see it. That's how bright it is. And I thought, boy, wouldn't it be interesting just to go and drive down through the strip in Vegas? And Beth said, no, it wouldn't be interesting to go and drive down through the strip in Vegas. So we didn't. But, oh, everything looks so good. It looks so exciting. The lights are so cheerful and everything. Everybody's having a wonderful time. They have one of those places now 22 miles from my church. It's in Cherokee. It's a casino. Oh, it makes it like everybody's having a great time. I got some state troopers from my church that work the highway. And they tell me funny stories. They say these people come up here on Friday afternoon. They can't wait to get to Harris. So what they do, he said, I can stop them, give them a ticket. They don't care what the ticket's for. Just give it to them so they can get on over there. He said, but I'll be working the Sunday evening shift on the highway. And they're coming back, going back to Georgia to go back to work. And he said, oh, they're crying. They're begging, don't give me a ticket. I'm so sorry. I don't have any money. They've lost it all. It looked good on Friday. It didn't look too good on Sunday night. See, sin is exciting in the way it appears, and the full-color magazine ads of whiskey and all that kind of stuff. It looks good. The average TV program makes immorality seem to be exciting, and nobody really ever gets hurt. I'm here to tell you, there's never been immorality where somebody didn't get hurt. Never. Never. Satan has brainwashed us. And sin is exciting. It looks fun for a while. It's deceiving in the way it begins because nobody starts out to be a harlot. Nobody starts out to be a drunkard. It's always innocent. It's always seemingly just going to have a little fun for a while, and one thing turns into another. And I could tell you story after story this morning of people I know up in the mountains where I minister that are bound in sin they never thought they'd be bound in. But they just started out. It was deceptive in the way it began. It was exciting in the way it looked. But they found out that sin is empty in its ability to satisfy. It's empty. There is no peace, saith my God, the Bible says, to the wicked. They are like the troubled sea when it cannot rest. The waters cast up mire and dirt. There is no peace, and I don't care what anybody tells you, sin will never make you happy. Never make you happy. Never satisfy your soul. Moses had seen the wickedness of Egypt. He had seen it, and he said, I don't want that. And I got news for you this morning. You may be at Ambassador Baptist College, but you still may have to decide, what is it you really want? Because there's kids that go out of Ambassador Baptist College and live for the devil. There's kids that go out of every Bible college and live for the devil. You still might have to make some decisions. What is it that you want? Famous people were not happy. They had all the things that the world calls success, and they had all the sin they could want. And for a while it was fun, but I remember the day in 1962 when I was 11 years old and I went to church, and the big news that Sunday morning when I walked into church was that Marilyn Monroe had died that morning. Now, y'all don't know Marilyn Monroe, but Brother Childs and I do. Brother Surrett does. Marilyn Monroe was the sexy glamour girl of the 40s and 50s and 60s and when I was a little kid, and she was the most famous female in the world. She died of an overdose, at least that's what they say. Some believe somebody else killed her. That's another story for another time. But sin did not satisfy her. In 1977, I was at Franklin Road School getting ready for the school year to start, and I was working on some things before the teachers came in, and somebody came in the hallway of the school and said, have you heard the news? I said, heard what news? I said, they just found Elvis. He's dead. See, that was the other big name when I was a kid growing up, was Elvis Presley. Had all the women a man could want, had all the fame a man could want. He would rent out theme parks at night and have it for him and his friends so they could play and party all night long in Memphis in these theme parks. But he had money running everywhere, but he wasn't happy. He wasn't happy. He'd sing gospel music, still wasn't happy. I'm here to tell you, sin has no power to satisfy. There are more psychiatrists in Beverly Hills, California than in any other place in the world per population. Why? The richest people live there, but that does not satisfy. I took a tour of Hollywood one time on a trip. Got on one of those tour buses. My wife and I were there, and we got on the tour bus, and the man got on the microphone, and he's driving the bus. He said, "Welcome to Hollywood, the fakiest town in America." He said, "There's nothing real out here." I thought the man was going to preach and give an invitation. It was good. But that's what sin is. It's fakey. Sin doesn't satisfy. It just looks good. It's appealing. It's deceptive. It's empty. It's binding. The other day, Saturday, my wife and I were in a home. And this young lady who's about 30, who's got four children and no husband, had wanted us to pray with her. This girl we've known since she was a little kid. So my wife and I went out to this girl's mother's home, and she met us in her mother's home because her home is a wreck. She didn't want us to come into her house. So we went to her home. She'd been gone for over a week. Hadn't even been home for over a week. Had four little kids. Hadn't even been to the house. Her mother just been doing what she could. And some of those kids go to our Christian school, by the way. And she'd been on a drunk. She'd been out on a party and binge for over a week over in a nearby town. Hadn't come home, whatever. And she's an alcoholic. She's about 30 years old with four little kids. And I talked to her for a long time. She came to church yesterday morning with her kids. And we have an RU program in our church. And I'm trying my best to get her to come to the first meeting on Friday. Her first time to ever go would be this Friday, 7 o'clock. Would you remember that young lady, please? I don't have to tell her her name, but you just remember the young lady I told you about. That she'll come to RU. Oh, she needs help. Why? She's bound by something that looked good. That looked good and seemed like this is going to be fun. No, it's not. It'll tie you up in ropes. It'll destroy your life. Sin looks good, but it's destructive. It destroys everything it touches. James 1:15, you know the verse. Lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. Sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth what? Death. Sin destroys health. It destroys health. I was riding one of our deputy sheriffs one time in Jackson County, and he pulled somebody over. Now, I don't get out and go to the door with these guys. I just sit there in the front seat with my bulletproof vest on. And they do put you in. I was sitting there, and Ken went to the door, and he talked to this lady. He noticed something interesting in the car, and he had suspicion, and so he asked the lady to step outside. She stepped outside, and he found some cocaine. And he found all kinds of apparatus, paraphernalia, drug paraphernalia, all that stuff. And so he, handcuffed her, put her in the back seat of our squad car. And so we took her in. I didn't take her in. I'm all along for the ride. But Ken takes her in, takes her to the magistrate's office Saturday afternoon, books her, has her put in jail and all that. And after a while, he comes back out and we go on down the road. And I said, Ken, I said, how old was that lady? He said, how old do you think she was? I said, she looked like she's in her 60s. He said she's in her 30s. That's what sin will do to you, girls. It'll take away all your beauty. It'll take all that away, all that God's given you. It destroys your image. It destroys your health. It destroys everything about you. It turns loving mothers into child neglectors and loving fathers. I've seen men get under the influence of sin and do horrible things to their children. It destroys homes. It makes orphans out of kids. Parents go to jail. One time, there was a fellow in jail in Georgia that I was ministering to, and he had a wife and three children back up there where we live. So he's in jail. I go to Georgia to see him in jail, and then a few days later, I got a phone call from a lady in our church that said, "Preacher, we got a real problem." I said, "What is it?" Said, "The man who's in jail in Georgia, now his wife's in jail in another county in Georgia, and the kids don't have anybody because there was nobody else around." So some folks in our church took those kids in for a little while until one of the parents got out of jail. That's what sin does. It makes orphans out of kids. I could just keep talking. How many marriages have I seen destroyed by sin? But it's fun. How long? For a while. It's fun for a while. Oh, I don't know how else to illustrate this. There was a lady that bought life insurance on her mother. This is before 9/11. She bought life insurance on her mother right before her mother got on an airplane. Little did her mother know that the girl had planted a bomb in her mother's suitcase that was stowed away as cargo. And that bomb blew that plane up and blew it out of the sky and killed that girl's mother. She was trying to collect some money off the death of her mother. I know that story because I read about it in the FBI building in Washington, D.C. That's what sin will do. It'll turn you against the people that love you the most. It'll make you mad at the people trying to help you. And it'll take you and it'll destroy all the natural affection you ought to have in life. That's what it does. Years ago when I was in college in Chattanooga, Tennessee, I used to go every Wednesday night to the Union Gospel Mission. Now, if you want to see what sin will do, go to a rescue mission. Is there one near here? Okay. We used to go to rescue mission. In fact, I was sitting in Bible class with Dr. Wymel Porter, who was a great old Bible teacher at Tennessee Temple back in the 1960s. And Dr. Porter asked one day, he said, I need somebody to go with me every Wednesday night to the rescue mission and lead singing. Well, I know how to wave my arms and lead singing. So I went up after class, said, Dr. Porter, I'd be glad to come if I can help you. He said, good. He said, come every Wednesday night. And he said, bring some of the students down from school and have special music, and I'll preach every Wednesday night. And I said, that'd be fine. So we started doing that. And then after a few months of that, he came up to me one day and said, Benny, he said, tell you what let's do. He says, every one Wednesday night a month, I want you to preach on Wednesday night, and I'll lead the singing. There was two problems with that. One, he couldn't lead the singing. And number two, I didn't want to preach in front of him. He knew Greek and Hebrew and all those other things. And he was my teacher. You know what it's like trying to preach in front of your teacher. And I'm about 20 years old. But I did. And so one night I preached and gave an invitation. Here comes this old fella down to the altar. And so I came around and got down beside him and knelt by him for a while. And I said, sir, can I help you? What's your problem? He looked up at me with those old worn out eyes and whatever. He says, I used to be just like you. I said, tell me about it. He says, well, I went to Bible college. I graduated. I got married. I had a wonderful family. I was pastoring the church. I was doing all the things that you talk about. He says, and then I took a drink. One drink led to another. He said, I lost my wife. I lost my kids. I lost my church. I lost everything I have. He says, and now what I do is I go from rescue mission to rescue mission. And I live off of rescue missions. He says, and I have ruined my life. And I prayed with that man that night, encouraged him the best I could, that life wasn't over, that he could still do something with his life if he gets straightened out with God. That is where sin really leads. It's fun. For how long? For a while. But I tell you what, I'll be 60 this year, and I'm not ready for the grave yet. At least I hope I don't go yet. But I'm getting closer, and I'm here to tell you the truth, and here it is. It pays to serve Jesus. It pays every day. It pays every step of the way. I want to be like Brother Childs one day, be in my 80s. Am I right there, brother? Are you 80s, 80s, something? I want to be in my 80s and still serving God. Because it paid. The devil didn't have any happy old men. But God does. Look at Brother Dalton. Happy old man. Who was a blessing to our church about 2 months ago, by the way. But God has some happy old men serving God. It looks good for a while. Let's bow for prayer. Lord, I pray that we will not forget the illustration of Moses and how he chose to be identified with the people of God. He chose that. He chose to suffer rather than to enjoy the pleasure of sin for just a little while. God, maybe there's some young people listening to me this morning. They've dabbled with some sin for a little while. I pray that they'd get rid of that, get it out of their lives, knowing where it leads. But thank you for the scriptures today. Bless, I pray. Brother Bill, if you'll come and close the service as God leads you, my brother.